You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, my name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the Westside Community News, and today we are diving back into player season reviews after a couple draft episodes and free agency preview episodes, looking at some veteran wings from last season. Justin Holiday, Torrey Craig, two guys who did not finish the season with the Pacers. Talk about what we learned from them, what their season was, what their contributions were to the Pacers' struggles early on in the campaign before they were dealt, and TJ Warren and his not-so-much season with the Pacers. We'll get to all that today, including TJ Warren's free agency, which will be its own episode in the free agency series, probably next 2 weeks from now. Next week will be all draft stuff, basically, with the lottery. We are 1 week from the lottery. We will do an odds breakdown next week, including more prospects later this week and another big prospect early next week. You don't want to miss all that. And yesterday's episode was Shaedon Sharpe, the wild card of the draft. Apologies for the audio quality issues yesterday. There was a lot of work that went in to make it at least at that level, just so you know how bad it was. At first, let's dive right in to the veteran wings and their seasons with the Pacers, what it meant for the season, where their futures are, all that good stuff. We'll start with TJ Warren and his season with the Pacers, and I'm done. I covered the whole thing. TJ Warren did not play a game for the Pacers this season. Very, very confusing. How I've been doing this is, what was good about the player season, what was bad about it, what's a stat there, how can they grow, what's their future with the team. For good about TJ Warren's season, I just typed LOL. Because there's nothing, right? He grew as a person and was a helpful practice guy and was, by all accounts, a good teammate through all this. Like, that's all good stuff, right? Like, that is all good. But he did not play a game, and it's impossible to put any value on what he did on the floor for the team. And that is the bad part about TJ Warren's season, obviously. He did not play a single game. He has played four games since August of 2020, right? By the time the next NBA season starts in October, maybe he plays in preseason for whatever his next team is. By the time TJ Warren touches the court next, he will have played four games in over 2 years. That is devastating. Foot injuries, setbacks, whatever you want to call them, multiple things going on here is terrible for any player. Navicular fractures take a very long time to recover from. I am receptive to that. I think everyone is. Not as long as it has been. There are still some questions about his actual injury status and recovery process. It seems like he'll be healthy for the next season, given where he was at times during this season, what he was able to do. They did shut him down because there was no point of rushing him back, but it seems like he'll be ready to go by the start of next season. So it was obviously devastating for the Pacers that he was not able to play. And I voiced this before when talking about TJ Warren, but this is a good time to do it again when talking about the bad part of his season. It is really tough to overstate how big of an impact not having him was on this team. Like, a lot of people, I predicted the Pacers would go exactly 500 this season. And obviously they were way worse than that, so my prediction was terrible. But had I known at the time, two things. I mean, they made a bunch of trades, which if you know that at the time, you'd obviously knock it down a peg. But if you told me when I was doing that exercise, hey, TJ Warren's not going to play all season, obviously you'd go way lower than 41 wins. Being a 3-and-D wing who can also score off the bounce is a massively impactful player. So that, I mean, it's hard to overstate how much it, changing the direction of the franchise this season, all that stuff that went poorly, you know, kind of falls back to they did not have a key starter at a key position. And two guys we'll talk about at the end here, two fill-ins, Justin Holiday and Torrey Craig, were not up to the level that they were expected to be when they were on the Pacers this year. Warren's injury was a huge, huge factor in the Pacers' struggles. And if you'll recall, you know, there was some talk about maybe like December, January return, and he tweeted that he's back on the floor playing, and I, you know, we could see him a few times. I think at Summer League was when we saw him, at least on a broadcast, and he had no boot on, and then there was the announcement from the Pacers. There was a setback in, or whatever they called it, slower than expected recovery, I think is what the Pacers called it. It was just all bad for TJ Warren's season, at least from an injury perspective. So perhaps he can get healthy and be as good as he was again, but it's really hard to get a read for what kind of player he can be when he has played a grand total of 117 NBA minutes since, again, August of 2020. So that's obviously terrible. For the one stat that tells it all, I just typed zero games played. I mean, there's not much to say about TJ Warren's season on the floor. Again, by all accounts, great off-court dude, was playing one-on-one all the time in practice with other dudes who are recovering or not fully practicing. Like, did not have zero, actually zero value to the team. Like, in theory, had positive value, but obviously devastating that he didn't play. Area for growth for Warren is just going to be getting his foot healthy, being able to be squared away on the floor, playing games, having an impact on a basketball team. I think these are all obvious. Breaking down his season is just, why didn't he play? And we need to get answers at some point about that. And what is next for him? Because obviously him not playing had a huge impact on their failures this season. But what comes next for him? Well, that is where things get interesting with TJ Warren, because I don't want to say that the Pacers are in a position of power. You're never really in a position of power in a player-driven league with an unrestricted free agent. But they are in a good spot in theory to get a potentially good free agent for cheaper this summer, bringing back TJ Warren. And that's where his future coming off of this injury is really fascinating. His future at the Pacers is so interesting. Again, I'll do a full episode on his free agency in the future. But, you know, by all accounts and by TJ Warren's own words, he likes playing in Indiana. He's tight with David West, who likes playing in Indiana. He's a low-key guy. Indianapolis is a more low-key NBA city. It's a good match. The Pacers need wings, like any wings. It would be helpful for the Pacers. They were slamming guards on the wing. They were playing fours at the three a lot down the stretch of last season. They need wings. TJ Warren is a wing. If TJ Warren wants to come back to Indiana, there is a very natural fit from a basketball perspective. The pushback is a couple things. One, the injury is obvious. How do you value his contract? Because it could be very easy for Warren to come in and want guaranteed money to come back from and rehab from, and it's probably going to be very easy for several NBA teams to say, no, we're not comfortable giving you that much guaranteed money. And as something talked about with a lot of other free agents for the Pacers, like Ricky Rubio, for example, and some others that we've done full episodes on, Kiefer Sykes, for example, Lance Stevenson, he is 28 right now, TJ Warren is. He turned 28 during this past season. He'll turn 29 before next season even starts in September. That does not really match up with the Pacers timeline. So maybe he'd be willing to do a shorter deal that would line him up better, or, you know, make it like a trial run almost with his fit with the team. But there are reasons to not bring him back as the Pacers, to the point that I think that that his negotiation in free agency will be a lot of what is he willing, or what is he, you know, what are his offers financially look like? Because if TJ Warren wants multiple years of guaranteed money, if you're the Pacers and you know you got Tyrese Haliburton's big contract coming up and you need to keep your powder dry so you can make a bunch of big moves before that happens, and maybe Chris Duarte's at some point big contract coming up, you cannot risk paying TJ Warren guaranteed money at any point if he is not healthy enough to play or is no longer an impactful player. So his free agency will be fascinating in terms of, can a creative contract be enough? Is there a way to get enough guaranteed money on there with all the bells and whistles that makes it enough for TJ Warren to say, yes, I will take that deal, but also enough that the Pacers are comfortable with how this works? So there are a lot of ways this could go, right? You could, if you're the Pacers, do a two-year deal with the team option on the second year, but if you're TJ Warren, you might not want the team option and maybe another team, because his value is probably lower than the mid-level exception after these injuries, could offer you two fully guaranteed seasons, and then he might take that. Or, you know, maybe you do a player option the second year, but it's a low guarantee so that Warren can feel like he can opt in if he gets hurt again or he's not as good, and then he can get some more money. That's some risk aversion there. And there's other things that the Pacers or any team in the NBA could do to make it a more balanced contract for this very interesting situation, right? You can have unlikely bonuses in a contract, up to 15% of the total money, that they could say, like, if he plays an X number of games, he gets a bonus. That way, if he plays enough games, he gets paid, or if he makes a certain number of shots or something like that, you know, that's a way to potentially say, hey, your base salary is low, but you can bonus up to what you want money-wise if you play or if you're healthy and solid, right? That's one thing they could do. Another thing the Pacers or NBA teams could do, you know, Joel Embiid has this in his contract. Jonathan Isaac has this, and it actually just hurt him. It did not end up hurting Embiid. You can have injury protection language in your contract. Derrick Rose might have had it. I don't remember that one. For like certain injuries. So like if he hurts his foot again or doesn't play in a certain number of games in a season because of an injury to certain body parts, then his contract of mount goes down. You're allowed to put that kind of language in a deal. The Magic have done it. The Sixers have done it. You know, it's out there. So perhaps that's what it is. It's, hey, TJ, if you play 60 plus games in the first year of your deal, the second year becomes fully guaranteed. And maybe that's risky, but there are a lot of bells and whistles that a team can include, including the Pacers, in a deal like this to make it so it's still possible to get him on a value deal, but there's windfalls to get out of it if he is either ineffective or injured again with such a difficult to gauge injury. So with all those things in mind, I kind of think that you know, that the Pacers and Warren are a pretty good fit despite his age being elevated, because he won't necessarily be looking for that longer term deal. And so the Pacers could get him on a value contract, see how a wing fits in with Tyrese Haliburton. I mean, obviously well is going to be the answer, but how well or how much having something like that helps with their issues last year, and see how good he is, because he could be a trade asset. He could just be a valuable player that they want on their team going forward. It makes sense to me that TJ Warren would be a guy that comes back to the Pacers, but not on a deal longer than maybe 2 years or 2 years plus an option year or something. So that I think it'll be one of the weirdest contracts. I don't think it'll just be like two fully guaranteed seasons unless it's with another team who is extremely willing to take on risk. But I do think it makes some sense for the Pacers to do it, but not for a very long time, for age reasons, for injury reasons, for effectiveness reasons, for cap reasons. It seems like a short-term deal will be in Warren's future. Whether that's with the Pacers or not is kind of how they determine what their path to be. I think it makes some sense. He's like right on the tippy top of the ages where I think it makes sense that, like, okay, if you're going to be, I guess I get it, but not in a long-term deal. So that's what I think about Warren's free agency. I'll do a more in-depth podcast with more specific injury numbers and more about that language in Embiid and Isaac's deal in the future. But I hope that all makes sense. Let's do two wings. Let's talk about two wings who also struggled during this season and played a role in the Pacers falling short of expectations. Justin Holiday and Torrey Craig. Will do Justin Holiday first, since he spent more time with this Pacers team. Before we talk about Justin Holiday, I want to talk about two awesome groups of people. First up, the good folks over at Prize Picks. Are you looking for a daily fantasy option for the NBA? Then you need to try the award-winning Prize Picks app. It's daily fantasy made easy. I know you'll absolutely love it. It's easy to use. You pick 2 to 5 players and an over-under on their projections. You can up to 10 times on any entry. It's just you versus the projected numbers. You can make the entries in 60 seconds or less. It's super easy. They're safe and offer fast withdrawals. And they have an award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play. They offer any prop you can think of. Points, rebounds, steals, you name it. They got it. They can do mixed sport entries with baseball or whatever as well. And they don't just offer NBA and baseball, college basketball and football. When it's going, NFL, MLB, soccer, MMA, and more. For a limited time, PrizePicks has an exclusive no-brainer of an offer for all of our listeners. You can get $50 for free if a single player in your first PrizePicks entry scores a single 1 point. You got to use the code NBA when you sign up. That's right, an exclusive offer for Lockdown listeners. If a player in your first entry scores a single point, you'll get $50 for free if you use the code NBA. PrizePicks, daily fantasy made easy. Let's also talk about AG1, our next partner. A product that I use almost literally every day. I started taking it to help supplement my gut health in the morning, get me going and waking up early every day. It's a good thing to drink alongside coffee. I've been doing it for a few weeks now, and it's awesome. Super healthy, nice tropical taste. I look forward to having it each morning. So what is it? With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to start your day off right. It helps me wake up, helps me feel better throughout the day. I'll happily send you guys pictures of the product so you can see what it is and how it works. It's lifestyle friendly. If you're keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, they've got it for you. Less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals. And their founder was tired of trying to ingest all this stuff and spending like $100 a day. He made it for way, way cheaper, and it's still super healthy. Right now, time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition to make it easy. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you got to do is go to athleticgreens.com/NBA network. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/NBA network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, Locked On NBA Big Board is your way to go. To learn more about the draft and all the prospects in it, you can hear Rafael Barlow, who was on yesterday on Locked On Pacers, talking about Shaedon Sharpe. Highly recommend you listen to that show. If you do, apologies in advance for the audio quality flubs, but it's a great show. That's my favorite draft prospect show I have done so far. Let's talk about Justin Holiday in his season with the Pacers and another contributor to the Pacers not meeting expectations this year. Again, there's several of these players. I'm not pinning this success and failures of the Pacers on any one player. That'd be stupid. But Justin Holiday, I don't know if it was an age-related thing or a role-related thing, although he had a different role in Sacramento and still was not as good as he was in the past. But something happened, and he hit a wall this year. Justin Holiday, 32 years old, turned 33 right before the end of the season with the Kings, and he had such a bizarro season. You know, the same kind of stuff with Justin Holiday that was always there was kind of helpful, right? The threes fell at the end of his tenure with the Pacers, right? He found the three ball in his last month before he was traded. I have no idea if that was a factor in the Kings maybe wanting him or anything like that, but from the turn of 2022 onward with the Pacers, he made 41.2% of his threes on over seven a game, right? That was the best part of Justin Holiday's season, even though the Pacers were really struggling in this stretch, like on that road trip, for example, when they beat the Lakers and the Warriors on back-to-back nights. Like, he was killing it for that stretch of the season, really helping kind of transition the Pacers from the team they were trying to be at the beginning of the season to all the new guys they had in during that COVID outbreak within the team. He was really good then. Like, he was the player he was the first two seasons with the Pacers during that stretch. That's when he was at his best and his value looked good. And his stats ended up looking mostly good because that stretch was so solid. And he also played in 49 games outside of, again, missing time with COVID like several players did. He did not miss a game for injuries with the Pacers this season, was inactive due to that trade at the end of his tenure with the team. But, you know, those are the good things about Justin Holiday. He showed what he was good at during his good seasons with the Pacers and played in a bunch of games. The bad part is... he was no longer consistent this year. And just a lot of Justin Holiday's stats and successes really fell off, right? 35% from deep in the year 2021, right? That is incorrect. I did not click far enough down on Basketball Reference. 35% from three in the year 2021, shot below 40% from the field. 39.7%, his 2-point percentage was not particularly solid. Rebounding down a little bit, steals down a little bit, just general consistency really, really waned for Justin Holiday this season. That was a big part of the Pacers struggling early in the season, is his shot was totally gone early when they were kind of waffling him in and out of the lineup as a starter, trying to figure out what to do with Duarte. You know, the first three losses of the season, they lose by 1-1. He shoots 1-for-7 for deep in the first game and 1-for-3 from deep in the second game. You know, a lot of these close games, if he was just a little better, they lose by 3 to Denver. He was 2-for-6 from deep. They lose by 3 to Charlotte. He was 1-for-4 from deep, right? They lose by 2 to Minnesota. He misses 5 threes in that game. You know, the consistency was not there for Justin Holiday this season. It was a big part of him losing effectiveness. And he was such an important part of the Pacers' really solid bench successes in past seasons. You know, another part of, had you told me before the season, hey, Justin Holiday is finally going to hit an age wall. Or I don't know if it's an age wall. I don't actually know what necessarily causes, but something is going to cause Justin Holiday to be worse this season. If you told me that before the season, I would have probably knocked the Pacers down a few wins from 41, not all the way to 25, probably not even farther than like 40 or 39, but a few. And now his offensive consistency dropping off was a big part of that. Like, he was a lock to be a near 40% three-point shooter and pretty consistently in his first two seasons with the Pacers. That was not the case despite his strong finish from deep. The other factor for Justin Holiday that completely tanked his effectiveness with the Pacers, the defensive drop-off was huge. Like, he was getting cooked off the dribble more often. His team defense was a little worse. And I think the Pacers schematically had some issues that hurt the team defense part. Like, that was on everybody. That was not just on him. And I'll actually talk a little bit about that with Torrey Craig in a second as well. The on-ball defense definitely got worse, though. It was never awesome because he's a little skinnier, but it was definitely a declining thing this year. They needed him to do a little more as he was inserted in the starting five. It did not work. Pick your favorite advanced stat, whatever. I'm sure it all says the same thing. But his defensive box plus minus with the Pacers in 49 games this year was negative 0.8. That's not terrible. It's below replacement level. Last year with the Pacers, it was basically 1.8 his first season with the Pacers. That minus 0.8 number is the worst of his career. Worst of his career. So by that metric, and that is in general the advanced stat, at least the easiest to find one. I think EPM is my favorite, but the easiest to find one that matches the eye test the best for me. You know, shows that this was impact-wise, perhaps the worst defensive season of Justin Holiday's career, really dropped off there. And that's kind of one of the stats to me that tells it all about his season, is that the impact number dropping, but also a couple more, like just general advanced stats do a pretty good job to me of telling his story. With the Pacers this season, 56.8% true shooting for a guy that's supposed to be 3-and-D. That is his lowest true shooting percentage with the Pacers. That defensive impact number was his lowest of his career, but also with the Pacers. And his free throw rate, lowest of his career with the Pacers this year, 9%. Had never been below 10 at all, right? Was hovering around like 14, 15% his first couple years with the Pacers. Dropped all the way to 9. Like, he was just not as effective of a player. Only took 41 free throws in 49 games with the Pacers this season. His handle, like he can put together some dribbles, but it never really got him anywhere. And so without Sabonis for some of this, well, I guess he mostly played with Sabonis, but you know, with guys in and out of the lineup, his cutting was less effective, his three was less effective, so it was harder for him to run guys off the line. Like, it all just culminated in Justin Holiday becoming a supremely less effective player. And I would have said, you know, that was something potentially in the water with the Pacers, But with the Kings, and this is the Kings, so I don't, you know, perhaps something's in the water in Sacramento too, was even worse. 34% from deep shot, less than 35% from the field in Sacramento, his lowest scoring average per game with the Kings since, my goodness, 2016-17 for Justin Holiday. You know, he continued that lack of effectiveness. He wasn't all bad this season. Again, he had a really strong 2 months for the Pacers from the start of 2022 through the trade deadline. Was a very solid veteran for the team. Was not like a useless defender and was their vet for a while. Like, he did do some good stuff for the Pacers. But a lot of his impact stats really show why he dropped off and what areas he was not helping the team in ways that he was in prior seasons, even with the same franchise. And his drop-off was a big part of both the bench not succeeding when he was with that unit and the starters not having a quality wing when he did be the starter. The area for growth I put for him was just putting that consistency together. Had he shot the same, that 40% mark that he did, you know, in 2022 and the parts of 2021 of the season, the Pacers definitely don't have as bad of a record in close games this season. They probably cross the New Year line, not 500, but maybe like two or three games under instead of like seven or eight games under. You know, that would be a season-changing sort of thing that maybe prevents them from changing direction at the trade deadline. Maybe they, you know, think that maybe they recover after their COVID break. Who knows what changes? You know, it changes a lot. But the inconsistency, like I went through four close games, or if he hits one more three, they win. You know, it was really killer for them that he could not find his shot at times this season. So his future with the team, well, he's under contract with the Kings, so we skip over that section. And how I've been doing this, if you haven't listened to any of the season reviews before, is what did I learn from this player? Or what can the Pacers learn from this player instead of making it about me? And for Justin, and I think this is something that's kind of known, but for the Pacers in recent seasons, they've done really well at kind of not fountain of youth thing, but getting good production from, you know, the vets they bring back or the role players at whatever age they are, like McDermott and McConnell and Justin Holiday for 2 years, and Kylo Quinn gave him good minutes as a reserve big, and Corey Joseph gave him good, you know, all these guys get in their upper 20s and we're doing, and even in their 30s, we're doing well for the Pacers. But every player has an age where the effectiveness goes away. That's what makes LeBron and Chris Paul being super megastars at 37 so impressive. But every player's got an age where that effectiveness just kind of goes away and they can't be the same player anymore. And for role players, when a lot of your impact is predicated on doing one or two things really well, you know, it kills you when you can't do those things as well. And so Justin Holiday being, you know, maybe the worst, but still good enough at both of these things to be considered a 3-and-D wing, a valuable thing to have in the NBA. And to no longer be good at either of those skills, although the three came around, but to no longer be good at either of those skills shows just how finicky, or how fickle, I guess is the best word, that relying on old vets can be when you don't know when they're going to hit that wall of age. You know, that could happen at any time to any player. Perhaps, you know, maybe Lance is close. He doesn't seem to like he's hit it now. Maybe Torrey Craig is getting close. You know, he is 31 now. Like, we'll talk about him in a second. You just never know. And I think that seeing him drop off like this kind of reminded me of that. And that's why some of these guys, when they cross, they like to line up their contracts at a certain age. And why some of these guys, when they cross their, you know, make up your age, but 32, 33, it's a lot harder for them to get big money contracts unless they are these super duper mega stars. So that's something to keep in mind. You know, having sage vets is good for young growing teams like the Pacers, but it may be hard for them to kind of know what that age is for every player, and that's a risk you have to bake in when you sign guys. Speaking of older players, let's talk about Torrey Craig, his brief half-season stay in Indiana. Great idea of a signing that did not pan out. Let's talk about why. Before we do that, though, let's talk about BetOnline.net, our partners that continue to be the number one source for all of your betting needs and sports info. You can find all the latest odds, news, and sports developments, including this year's basketball playoffs, Major League Baseball scores. They've got fights. Even they've got NFL futures up there, including some of those preseason lines for the early games in August already up there. And BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, from live betting to playoffs to esports and more. They've got playoff lines up for tomorrow's NBA action. Suns favored by 6 at home, trying to bounce back after 2 losses. Heat favored at home with Embiid playing his first game in Miami this series by 3. You can get all those lines at betonline.net. Head over to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and the action over at betonline.net. BetOnline is where the game starts. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, I recommend Locked On NBA to hear about the latest and greatest around the NBA. Celtics Bucks was last night. You'll get our lovely Locked On NBA Monday hosts David Ramil and Matt Moore on that game, as well as Warriors Grizzlies. No Ja Morant, no Steve Kerr. Lots of juicy stuff going on around the NBA. Last night, get it all on Locked On NBA. Let's talk about Torrey Craig still fighting in the playoffs, speaking of the Suns in the NBA playoffs, and his half-brief season with the Pacers. What can be learned from him? What did he do? What was good about his season? I actually think Torrey Craig's defense got a little underrated by the end of his time with the Pacers. His team defense, you know, I thought it was a little better in the past, watching him on really good teams like Phoenix and Milwaukee last year, for example. Those teams have excellent defensive systems. The Pacers, obviously, is a terrible defensive team this year. Did not have as good of a defensive system. His team defense was not, like, particularly good, but his on-ball defense was awesome, and it was something the Pacers desperately needed, and I thought it got a little underrated by the end of his time here, that he could really, he was their best option on so many of these wings that have killed them for years and years and years, and not even just the superstar Durant, Tatum-level dudes. Like OG Anunoby's having big scoring games, and Miles Bridges is having big score games, and Mikal Bridges, you know, those things were these random big wings that the Pacers had no answers for. That did not happen as much, where they just blew up and had good games against the Pacers. Miles Bridges still did, but that's because he ascended into a near all-star level player this year. You know, Torrey Craig was helpful in that way, and I thought his defense, especially his on-ball defense, got pretty underrated at times this season, and he was a really good stopper for the Pacers. Maybe I'd have to think about this in a little more detail, but I typed this, so I'll just say I think possibly their best in that role since Thaddeus Young almost a half decade ago at this stage. You know, they've tried out Sabonis even on some of those stronger guys, and Justin Holiday got it a few times. Chris Duarte was okay at it this season, but I think that Torrey Craig was their best at it they've had in almost a half decade. And that's why I like that signing so much. You know, this summer, 2 years, $10 million for a guy that can fill one of their hugest needs. I mean, they stunk at defending that archetype of player in seasons past, even early on in this season a little bit. You know, they really needed him to step into that role, and he did a pretty good job of it despite having a lot of warts in other areas, and mainly just like Justin Holiday, wildly inconsistent offense, preventing him from being basically a starter for so many teams, right? Like, that was that game, I think, in Brooklyn, like 28 points, massive explosion, looks like a beast of an offensive player, had these random games where he would just cook off the dribble and look like a beast, right? He had 22, I think, or 20, I forget. He had a big game in Orlando right before getting traded, right? Like, he had some really nice scoring games, and his off-the-dribble shooting was something he did more this season, but he never put that all together where he was, like, always an offensive force when he was out there. Like, he had a stretch from right after Thanksgiving, November 28th, through let's just go through Christmas. These are his points in games. He didn't even play in three games. He was kind of out of the rotation for a lot of this because O'Shea Brissett turned out to be better. Here's Torrey Craig's points in each game from right after Thanksgiving through Christmas. 3-0-0-0, doesn't play. 0-0, doesn't play. 5-5-8, and that's it, right? Like, that is in the midst of a season where he had a few games of 28, 12, 10, 14. Like, he was just wildly inconsistent on offense, and he was trying to kind of force it, it felt like, at times to me. Like, he was dribbling way more than I ever thought he should, whereas on the Suns, for example, even now, like, he's just catch-and-shoot kind of guy. He does dribble every so often, but way more catch-and-shoot or way more just movement shot situations. Like, that's even in the stats, and that was one of the stats I have, actually the stat I have that kind of tells the story of his season, right? With the Pacers, 56.1% of his two-point shots were assisted. That's the lowest of his career. That means he was taking, and of the shots he made, the most unassisted buckets of his career. And Torrey Craig's not a guy who should be doing that. And that, again, is part of the Pacers' struggles, is that they needed someone with their second units at times, especially after McConnell got hurt, to dribble and score. And they need Torrey Craig to do that. It's really killer. He jumps to the Suns. That number drops by almost 8%. On his percentage of, again, unassisted buckets, right? Like, they are having him be a catch-and-shoot guy, a much more play finisher. In fact, with Phoenix at 63.4%, the second highest unassisted rankings of his career. I have to subtract by one in this, and I keep getting it backwards. So they are just using him almost purely as a finisher, catch-and-shoot kind of guy. And that kind of shows, you know, with the second unit, like, especially when McConnell was hurt and Wanamaker was really struggling and Duarte was out, like, their second unit was, like, Torrey Craig having to hoist up some shots and create, and, like, Keelan Martin was having to create, and, like, Dwayne Washington couldn't really set up anybody else. Like, that was a really rough stretch. Jeremy Lamb couldn't set up other guys. That December, early January stretch, they had no self-creators, and they were relying on Torrey Craig to kind of do it, and that's why his impact couldn't be what it needed to be with the Pacers. He had to use more effort on offense than he was ever intended to. So he could never be the defensive force he needed to be, trying to be a scorer, being inconsistent on that end. And it just did not work out in that way. So his area for growth to me, and this isn't even necessarily on him. I put knowing his role, because if he had just tried to be more of that catch and shoot guy, I think his impact would have looked a lot better with the Pacers. But some of that's on the Pacers a little bit, right? To set him up in the right situation to succeed. Like, in hindsight, a big benefit, because we know that Justin Holiday had a rough season and that a bunch of injuries would change the direction of the Pacers season. Would it have hurt if they tried Torrey Craig as the starting three when Duarte got hurt early in the year? I don't think it would have been such a bad idea. But obviously, hindsight is 2020, and this season is what it is. But now, had he been in a role where he was like definitely the fifth option defensive kind of guy, how much would that have helped him and the Pacers kind of iron out what he's supposed to do? I think in retrospect, that might have been something. He did end up starting 14 times, but that could have helped him and the Pacers. But in terms of him working on specific skills, you know, he mostly plays within himself and, you know, has that defensive impact and is at least a decent enough three-point shooter that it's, he doesn't make a lot of like ridiculous errors. His turnover rate is pretty low. Like, his block and steal percentages are good. He's just a solid role player who just was a little overcast with the Pacers. So I say knowing your role is a growth point for him, but really that's more of having him in the right situation to do all that stuff. So like Justin Holiday, he's no longer under contract with the Pacers. So talking about his future with the Pacers is a dumb exercise. He's with the Suns right now in their playoff run. He's under contract with the Suns next season as well. So what did I learn from Torrey Craig? Two things. One of them is something similar to Justin Holiday about, you know, the risk of an old guy, although he did basically maintain his exact impact on a per-minute basis and on an impact number basis from prior seasons, right? His scoring was right in line with what it was with Denver, Milwaukee, and Phoenix. The defensive impact was pretty close to what it was with all those teams as well. Like, his defensive impact was a little worse than it was with Milwaukee and Phoenix, but better than it was in Denver. You know, he didn't drop off like Justin Holiday did. He was just in the wrong role to me. So what I really learned more from Torrey Craig, and something for the Pacers to take home or put on the whiteboard, is a defensive stopper only does so much to help. You need either, one, more defensive stoppers along with that guy. A lot of times he was far and away the best defensive player on the court. They still had sieves everywhere else. And two, you need a schematic plan that's going to work in a way that when Torrey Craig is out there, you can still get stops in other ways. And they're, you know, when you rank 28th in defense, having a high-level stopper is only going to help you so much. Like, their defense was better with Craig on the floor than off. There is proof in the numbers that he was helping them on defense, but the defensive rating with him on was still bad. It was just worse with him not in the game. So their defensive scheme was not good. Their strategies obviously were ineffective this season. There's a reason they finished in the bottom five in defensive rating. So there's only so much having a defensive stopper can do if you don't have the right ecosystem and corresponding talent to really help that kind of player on that end of the floor. And that's something the Pacers will have to learn, is they have to improve schematically on top of talent-wise on defense going into next year or whenever they decide to compete again. The veteran wings for the Pacers here. I might have just talked about three players who will not even be on the team next year as we review these players. Next one we'll do the backup guards who played less than 30 games. That's TJ McConnell, Ricky Rubio, and Brad Wanamaker, everybody's favorite Pacer from this season. That will likely be Thursday's episode here on Locked On Pacers. Tomorrow, we're back on the free agency breakdown grind, and we'll do one that everybody wants to hear about, Jalen Smith. What does his free agency hold? Why could the Pacers resign him? Why could they not? How does that contract situation work? People still have questions about that. What do I think is going to happen? That'll be tomorrow's show. You don't want to miss it. It's going to be awesome. And then Friday, we'll do another prospect breakdown. I don't want to ruin who it is yet, but it's going to be a top 10 guy that I'm much, much higher on, I believe, than most mocks shaking out to be. Well, thank you guys a ton for listening. Hope you had a great day, and we will see you tomorrow.